This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So many people are just handed things and given things. And, you know, my father was a plumber, and I watched him work every day. I watched him work on the weekends. And I just come from a very blue-collar culture. And to me, this is all I know. And my husband is the son of a plumber as well. So we always joke that, like, what are the chances, right? And by the way, our toilets are broke. Like, makes no sense.
Hey now, what's cracking? Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast, and welcome to episode 308, where I am pumped this week to welcome somebody that I have never actually spoken to, but cannot wait to chop it up with. My guest this week spent 8 years as a prolific NFL reporter at ESPN before jumping to The Athletic to become their senior NFL insider. Of course, I'm talking about The Athletic's Diana Russini. Now, if you know Diana's work at all, you know how versatile she is. She even started as a Division I soccer player at George Mason. She has been a sports anchor for WRC-TV in Washington, D.C. She has contributed to shows like NFL Sunday Countdown, SportsCenter, Get Up and More, and now you can catch her on the Athletics Football Show podcast. Of course, she is as dialed in and locked in on the NFL as anybody out there. So, let's not waste any time. Let's get right to the conversation. It is episode 308 with The Athletic's senior NFL insider, Diana Russini, and it's coming at you right now. Diana, I know how busy you are. I have great respect for your time, and thank you so much for stretching out. It is awesome to talk to you. How are things?
Hi. Things are great. They're really, really good. I've had a lot of life changes over the last 6 months, actually the last 2 years, truthfully, but things are really good. I feel grateful. How are you?
The same. Exactly the same. Like, lots of life changes as well. Lots of good things going on. But, you know, we get to do something we love and we still feel strongly about. So that's a good thing. In fact, I want to get into that with you a little bit later on and not to get too personal about it. But I'm really interested in what you just said. But the NFL news cycle never, ever stops. We talked about this all day long on our daily program. I would love to get your thoughts. The Bills sent Stephon Diggs to the Texans. What is your reaction to that move? And why do you think Buffalo moved him?
Conversations between the Texans and Buffalo started yesterday morning. And there was a thought around the league that Buffalo had to move on from Diggs, but they weren't going to do it. They really wanted to keep him. They know that Josh Allen obviously needs him as a weapon. And we saw how much movement they had in this offseason and really turning this thing over to begin this rebuilding process, moving on from those veteran expensive players. So, you know, over and over, you heard from Buffalo for weeks, even going back 2 weeks ago at the league meetings, where GM Brandon Bean seemed pretty insistent that they were not going to move Stephon Diggs. And look, we know the drama that he comes with. We know there has been tons of ups and downs in Buffalo. But when you have a team like Houston that is trying to take full advantage of a rookie contract and CJ Stroud and Nick Casario there is really putting together a killer in the AFC and adding this final big splash on the offensive side of the ball. And from what I can gather from the couple of the conversations I've had over the last 24 hours, it took some convincing for Buffalo to make this move. But after having internal conversations and speaking with ownership, they decided to pull the trigger. And now Stephon Diggs is on CJ Stroud's team.
I think you're right. I agree with you. I absolutely love that move for Houston. I love what Nick Casario has done. He's taking some big, big swings. I mean, that right there is the definition of being all in, the offseason they've had. And for Buffalo, we've seen so much change, and it's hard to imagine that their window of opportunity is not closing. Maybe not slam shut. As long as you have Josh Allen, you've got that shot. But it's hard to make the argument that they're certainly better for all these moves. I mean, where does that leave Buffalo in your mind overall?
Well, what's interesting is when you look at the blueprint, so to speak, of what Houston is doing in this build, it's exactly what Buffalo was doing a few years ago. This is what Josh Allen was hoping to have, what CJ Stroud now has, right? So it's interesting to watch the swing of this one team moving on from a formula that really didn't work. It wasn't awful, but the goal is to win a Super Bowl. They weren't able to do it in the window with Josh Allen and Diggs on the same team. And now Diggs has an opportunity to do it with CJ Stroud. So Buffalo now, you know, I would expect them to be aggressive in the draft now because they're going to need some weapons. And we know that there's some really good receivers here. Are they going to be willing to trade up, to move up, to try to get a top guy to give this offense a spark? Because I do think a lot of the identity of this team is going to change, knowing that Stephon Diggs was such a big part of Buffalo. And I do think fans were shocked today. Just knowing that the reality of him getting moved had to be on the table, and the truth of it and the contract and everything that came with it, his age. But I think it's stinging Buffalo today.
So I mentioned the phrase all in, Diana. For instance, the Cowboys really haven't won jack since the mid-1990s. And I'm somebody who always brings the team up, but not because I'm chasing ratings, not because I'm looking for podcast downloads. But this offseason, you can't not talk about them when Jerry Jones is saying things like, we are ready to go all in, and then have done next to nothing at all. What is your outlook for Dallas this season?
Well, I think Dallas obviously has a lot of contracts that they have to deal with. And you're right. The definition of all in, I think, is different from what we appear it to, for what we believe it to be, compared to what Jerry Jones, who, let's give him credit in terms of how he has been as a GM, right? He's had a really good roster over the last few seasons, and they've just come up short. So when I hear all in, to me, that's a little bit part of his salesmanship. It's what Jerry does in believing and making the fans continue the loyalty to the franchise, that they have the answers. But Jim, you've been doing this a long time, and I bet you'd be the first one to make this observation that I've made over the years. Jerry Jones isn't the same guy, isn't that same type of owner with that punch that he used to have. And I have that opinion just really based off his decision, even keeping Mike McCarthy this past season. There was just a lot of talk, it appeared, a lot of chatter. But when it came down to making the hard decisions and saying, you know what, we can do better, they stood pat. And here we are sitting in a situation where we don't know what they're going to do with Dak. We don't know if they're going to sign him up. I believe they will. That's my opinion. I do think they'll wind up working this deal out. But obviously it's on the table here that the Dallas Cowboys could have a future without Prescott. So I don't know at this point what this Jerry Jones plan of all in and where that sits in the early April days, just 3 weeks out from the draft. But in his mind, the roster that they have is good enough with a possible few additions here coming up in just a few weeks.
Now, I think two things, Donna. One, I agree with you. He's not what he used to be. I think that, of course, none of us are. As you start to get older, maybe you lose a little bit of that, whatever that it is. I mean, I'll never forget the first time I met him, the first time I sat with him, and I sat in studio and I interviewed him in the early 90s. I mean, he was larger than life. I was just so taken by the guy and his presence. Of course, I wouldn't expect him to be like that right now. But yeah, no, I would agree. He's not what he used to be. And in terms of our definition of all in, I would agree. I don't see all in the way he sees all in, because apparently he sees all in as re-signing Rico Dowdle. That does not seem all in to me. So, no, I think we all have different definitions. What's really interesting, Diana, is the fact that as much as I talk about the Cowboys, I actually talked about the Jets more than the Cowboys last season, and I started the year being really, really high on the Jets like a lot of people, but then it all changed so dramatically. Aaron Rodgers goes down quickly, and they just seem really, really messed up organizationally. You did an entire expose for The Athletic detailing just how dysfunctional it all was. Just how bad was it? Like, when you got inside, you started to do what you do, how bad was it? And ultimately, who is calling the shots there?
I think what made that piece sting the fan base as much as it did was because it started off so great. Do you remember us talking in training camp?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What the vibes were around that team, and I saw it up close and personal. I live in New Jersey, so I would go over to Florham Park a lot. just to take it all in. It was so exciting for the fan base to have Aaron Rodgers on this team. And I had heard a few things from coaches on the staff just about the presence he had. So when I saw it in person, and I just couldn't believe the way he was just throwing the ball, his ability to teach, it just looked like everyone was rallying around him. He was playing part quarterback, part head coach, and everyone was fine with it. And it was good. It made sense. It was smart by the New York Jets to give the keys to the man who understands what it takes to win, especially when they have such a young roster. And truthfully, there's no one on that team that had been as far as he has. So there wasn't any dysfunction until the problem started once he was injured. That's really where it began. And then I know that sounds obvious, right? Because you lose your star quarterback, but the strong organizations, the strong teams fix that problem. They figure out a way to navigate it, not completely fall apart. And I think what happened was the second Aaron Rodgers was injured, from the top to the bottom of this organization, they gave up. Instead of coming up with the answer, they wanted to just sit in the depression, the sadness of we lost the guy that we invested everything into, instead of doing what, let's say, the Cleveland Browns did when Deshaun Watson went down and they were able to figure out a way. The Minnesota Vikings for a minute there figured out a way. We see it every season. You need a backup quarterback to step in to make some magic to fill the holes. It's tough to do what, let's say, the Eagles did years ago and go all the way with the backup, but you have to be able to figure out some sort of foundation and structure to your team, even if you don't have the star out there. And they just never had an answer. So look, just like anywhere else, even in corporate America, once the problems start, it just floods. And I think that's really what happened there. And they lost themselves in a season that started, you know, from game one, it just fell apart. So just the culture wasn't great. The locker room, the guys get along really well in terms of personalities, but you've been around losing teams. It's never good. And I think the leadership was lacking at times. So now, and look, Aaron Rodgers was pretty transparent about it during all of his appearances on the Pat McAfee show all season long. He's well aware that there were problems. In fact, he called his teammates out of basically, guys, let's keep this stuff in house. We don't need these issues, whether it was Zach Wilson being reluctant to wanting to go back in there after he was told that he was getting traded. You know, all these little stories that I do believe a lot of teams deal with, they were getting out because people were unhappy. Now, that being said, I do sense a different vibe in New York. I think they are beaten down. They are exhausted by what they just experienced. And they're really trying to steer the ship in the right direction. And I think the hope of Aaron returning and being healthy is going to completely transform this team and give them a shot this year.
You know, I really accept what you just said. I accept all that. I buy all that. I would follow and ask this, Diana. For instance, you're right, culture, leadership, these things were so sorely lacking. If they just folded the tent when he went down, now granted, that's not a small thing. I mean, they had so much invested in Aaron Rodgers. And I agree with you, even sitting here in California, and I've always been a big Aaron Rodgers guy's entire career, when he went there, man, they were fun, they were cool, they were interesting, that's why we were talking about them. But to hear you lay it out that they just kind of gave up when he went down, they gave up, they gave in, my question then is, where's the leadership, where is the culture, who had the vision, where was Robert Saleh, why didn't somebody step up and say, all right, guys, this really hurts, but enough is enough, we got to go back to work, we might not next man him up, but we do have a whole season to play.
It's called ownership. I think this is a situation where ownership allows things to happen. And sometimes, as we've seen before, owners don't want to ever admit they made a mistake. They don't want to say, you know what? We didn't get this right. Let's make a move. So at the end of the season, after a season that they had, after lack of leadership, lack of identity, and a team that just pretty much quit, Robert Saleh's name was getting floated around pretty much since December of, is he on the hot seat or not? Are the Jets going to have conversations with potential head coaches here on the market? Guys, obviously at the time before Raheem was hired, was a name I'd been hearing. Dan Quinn was a name. Mike Vrabel was out there. Bill Belichick. men that could come in there and earn and have the respect from a guy like Aaron Rodgers and get some control. Because I think the problem that the Jets had there was they gave Aaron too much control, too much power. And I remember when I worked for ESPN, giving the Jets so much credit on the air when I was talking to Mike Greenberg about, you know, the Jets are doing the right thing. They're giving the keys to the guy who knows. But at some point here, somebody has to be the teacher in the room. And it can't be Aaron. And I think that's really at the core of the problem here was there's no one in the Jets organization that Aaron Rodgers truly, truly was respecting from a superior standpoint. And it allowed him to have too much say. So here we are now. They're running it back. They didn't have the guts to go, you know what? Maybe we need a different voice here. Because there are people there that believe in Robert Saleh and they still believe in the in his leadership. And obviously that's ownership because they had every chance. You had Bill Belichick available. You had Mike Vrabel available. Two guys who we know. I don't think we have to sit here and debate whether or not Aaron Rodgers respects them. The second they see each other, it would just be established. But I don't think they want to deal with more change. So they're running it back. And that's been the mindset since he went down is we're just going to run this whole thing back next year. We just had bad luck.
Dana, you mentioned ESPN. I was going to go there next, but because you mentioned Belichick and Vrabel, I want to ask you, why does Mike Vrabel not have a head coaching job?
I think Vrabel has a very clear vision of who he is, who he wants his players to be, what he wants the locker room to be like, and what he expects from ownership. It is as clear as day. And in 2024, that does not always marry up with owners. That is not what owners seem to want, especially after this last coaching cycle. That was my observation, just watching all of this and having conversations with different teams while this process was ongoing. It just appeared that strong personalities that wanted to dictate how it would operate were turning off owners out of fear, in my belief, that they would have too much control. You know, the joke was always, it was the Vrabel's Titans, that he had too much identity there, that people thought of that team and they thought of coach rather than thinking of Ryan Tannehill, rather than thinking of Derrick Henry. And there are some owners who will buy into that and believe in that if that means success. And there are some that are turned off by that. And I think in this coaching cycle, for what owners observe this year, they stepped away from those that want that type of power. And I don't mean power in an irresponsible way. I think it's just they don't want to hand the keys over to someone because they want it. So that's why we saw Bill Belichick not get the job in Atlanta. They did not want to, the people in that building didn't want Bill to have all of that power. It's also why I believe Vrabel didn't get it. He was close to getting that Chargers job, but Jim Harbaugh made all the sense of the world there. And I do think that was the perfect fit. Vrabel obviously also interviewed for the Falcons job and the Carolina Panthers job. And they decided they want a coach that they could probably have a little bit more control of with less experience. I think this is going to change again, though, Jim, because you know the pattern of the league. When it swings in the direction of one way, it goes so hard like a pendulum back the other way. So I have a feeling, a strong feeling, and even just based on my experience, we're going to be talking about Bill and Mike probably mid-October. We're going to be having conversations about which owners are already having back-channel conversations with their agents.
I was going to say, I agree with you. The pendulum ultimately will swing back. So at the very top of the conversation, Diane, I said, how you doing? And you said, you know, I'm really, really good. There's been a lot of change in my life, but I'm really, really good. So I want to say, I work for ESPN, so I know what it's like to leave a company that was once known as the worldwide leader in sports. In fact, I left and then I came back and then I left again. Now, granted, the landscape and the world has changed dramatically and certainly has at ESPN. They're still a factor, but they're not what they used to be because there are so many outlets right now. I don't need to tell you that. I want to ask you this, though. Given how important you were to their NFL coverage, what was it like for you to leave ESPN, and why did you want to join The Athletic?
It was the scariest decision I have ever made in my life. It was a really difficult 24 hours, really, because it all happened very fast. I was basically on board with re-signing with ESPN. I'd been there 8 years, absolutely loved my time there, had great friendships, and there is so much value in comfort. And while I worked a lot and I was doing tons of shows and radios, I enjoyed it. I never dreaded going to a game or having a pop on get up. I loved it. It just gave me joy every day. So to walk away after The Athletic approached me with these ideas that just seemed to be not only smart for me business-wise, but just they were thinking about the future more. And the belief and confidence that they had in my reporting ability and how I could help raise the level of reporting that we would be doing at The Athletic, I believed in it. And I believed in the formula that they had laid out for me. And I think this was really telling to me as well. When I wake up in the morning, my alarm goes off. It's like 4:45. It's disgusting, but I have to do it to get my day in. The first thing I always did when I was at ESPN was I went to the Athletic app and opened up the Athletic, and I started my day just consuming NFL news through the Athletic. So I'm working at ESPN, but a fangirl of the Athletic, right? And my husband's also a huge NFL fan, and he reads and listens to the podcast on the Athletic as well. So it always was a conversation starter over dinner, breakfast. We would discuss the articles that the Athletic was doing. So the respect was always there. And I just didn't think my style could ever fit something like the Athletic because I don't have a strong writing background. So then when they just explained how they would make this work and how we could do it, it made so much sense. So just like any other big decision in my life, I invited my whole family over. I come from a really big family. And they came to my house. We sat in my living room. And they were actually on one side of the living room because I was freaking out. I was panicking about what to do. I have two offers on the table. And I sat and my dad just looked at me and he pointed to his heart. And he said, follow your heart. What does your heart tell you? And I said, my heart has gotten me in a lot of trouble in the past. I don't know if this is good counsel. But in the end, you know, I looked at my husband and I was like, let's do it. I'm going to leave ESPN. Woke up the next day. I threw up. way too much information for the listeners here, but
no, it's great.
Because it was that scary. The change. I think I learned that about myself, that the unknown frightens me more than anything else in the world, even more than failure. Just the idea of not knowing. And then when I realized that all I need to do is report and share information and continue to lean into what I love, I will have success, because that's what made me have success at ESPN. It wasn't ESPN. It was me. It just took a little time, I think, for me to recognize that. And so now 6-7 months later, you know, it was the best decision of my life, because it has pushed me and forced me to be uncomfortable at times, but also to be more aggressive. I've worked harder in the last 6 months of my reporting the NFL than I ever had in my entire career, because I feel this responsibility now and pressure, and also I'm so competitive that you know, my old colleague Adam Schefter, who taught me almost everything I know through his just the way he conducted himself, I love beating Adam. I live to beat Adam. We went back and forth on the dig story today. He got the trade. I got the compensation. I didn't text him. I usually like tease him. But I was meant to do this, and now I've been given an outlet with tremendous support.
All right, so there's so much in that that's so interesting. Now, for instance, a lot of us that get into sports media because we love sports, but we're not good enough to advance beyond, say, high school sports, right? Now, you, however, were good enough as a soccer player to play on the Division I level at George Mason University. I have to imagine that's going to help you. In fact, let me ask you this. If you play the game at that level, there's no way you play it at that level without being extremely driven and competitive. How has that competitive mindset translated to your role as an NFL insider? Because, like, as you point out, it's fiercely competitive. You're competing with a large group of really talented pros, all looking to outscoop each other. Has your background as an athlete helped you in that regard? Clones, what do we want? when we're craving protein or we need more energy. Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and it's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors that satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
Jim, you're not allowed to ask me this question because my family and friends listen to your podcast, and all they're going to do is play Bruce Springsteen's Glory Days, because they don't want to hear about my days as an athlete, because I like to remind all of them all the time how good of an athlete I was, because no one in my family was good. So like, even my husband stunk at everything. And I'm like, you realize I was all state in four sports in high school and played Division I soccer, right?
Dude.
Like, just obnoxious. And he's like, yeah, and it's sad that you peaked at 21. Yeah.
Funny.
Look, for me, I was a walk. So essentially, I was very good at a lot of different sports. I could have picked any sport I wanted to play. I picked the one sport I wasn't great at, which didn't make any sense. But I just loved the idea of walking onto a D1 program, knowing that I probably wasn't good enough. And I wasn't. And I made the team because the coach told me at the time he needed a scrappy player. And all the girls he had recruited that year were these beautiful, physically, but also from a stylistic standpoint, these beautiful soccer players from the South. And he's like, I need a little Jersey grit. And you have it. So, you know, a couple weeks in, he calls me into the office and he says, look, I took a chance on you, but you're not good enough. Like, you're too skinny. You don't have enough muscle and your ball skills are terrible. If I were you, I would just go join the track team. You're all state and track. Like, just, you could probably, you know, win the mile for George Mason right now. And I said, you know, please just give me the spring to gain weight and work on my skills. And if I don't make it in spring ball, you can cut me and I will never talk to you again. Like, I was like very, very clear. And I somehow convinced him, this little old Italian guy, I convinced him. And he said, fine. And he basically was like, whatever, girl, like, I'm going to wind up cutting you. So I gained 20 pounds and I basically grabbed one of the older girls and said, will you teach me how to play at your level and do this every day with me? So she would meet me in the racquetball room and we would just juggle the ball for hours. And I was the leading scorer in spring. And he called me into his office and he gave me a full scholarship. And that was my career. And it was the best lesson for me because I learned that if no one believes in you, including yourself, you're going to fail. You have to be your biggest fan. And even when you doubt yourself, and I believe me, I doubted myself. I was so tiny and I stunk, but I knew if I put the work in, and that's really what I carried over from soccer to what I do now, is I am not the most polished. The listeners are hearing me now. I'm not that articulate. I don't have that much depth, but I will outwork anyone. And I will put as much passion and discipline into it to at least be able to keep up with everyone. And that's really how it's helped me get here.
Diana, preach. I mean, I've always had the exact same mindset. My entire career, I always felt the exact same way, that there really was no great separation between me and anybody else. I never thought that I did anything better than anybody else. I knew that I was not exceptional in any way. I was the same exact way coming up. I totally can relate to what you're saying. And then it dawned on me that the only separation I really had was going to be in the things you just mentioned. You had to be the hardest worker in the room. You had to have the most discipline. You had to win the war of attrition. I understand all these things, but then you make it and you start to evolve. And I'm curious, so you're all these things, but you're an NFL insider, and if that were not all-encompassing and you feel pressure to do well, you feel pressure to reward those who believe in you and invested in you, and these are all things that are time-consuming enough, but you are also a wife and a mother, and you have two young kids. How old are your boys now, and then how do you strike a work-life balance with the demands of the job and the ambition you have?
Thank you for all those kind words. The mom job is the hardest. That is that any parent out there knows.
No doubt. I always say, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I always say to my wife, I do not want that job. This is why I bust my ass all day long at this job. I didn't want your job. And my wife, when I met her, she was more successful and better paid than I was and better at her job than I was at my job. But she wanted to be a mom and she loved it, man. That is a hard, hard job.
Yeah. And just because you love it doesn't mean it's easy, right? Like, she enjoys it, I'm sure, but she has her days and those moments where, you know, you sit in the car and you scream and you cry in the closet and you do all these things that I do, you know, and obviously doing this NFL insider job where you're expected to basically be on all the time. You know, I definitely have put myself in some crazy positions. You know, this morning with the Stephon Diggs trade, I'm typing on my phone, the Texan, I had been given a heads up that the story was going to break. So I was able to type up some stuff in my phone while I'm giving Mikey, my two-year-old, you know, a piece of French toast, and Joey's my one-year-old. And so
you have two in diapers.
Yeah, I've got two in diapers, and I appreciate that observation because that apparently is a difference maker. So I got these two little guys who are awesome, but they can't do anything for themselves. So, you know, it's mommy this, mommy that, and it's awesome. And I love it. It's all I've ever wanted. I knew that from a really young age, actually, that I always wanted to be married with a family, because I come from a really strong family as well. And I wanted what my parents had. And the difference is my mom was a part-time nurse. So she wasn't balancing the kind of things I am. And so she is probably the reason why I'm able to do what I can do, because I will give her credit. She is tough and hard on me, and she is not impressed with any of this crap. But she understands that this is what I was meant to do. And I do believe there's a little bit in her that is envious of the fact that I had that support and the upbringing and the college education that she didn't get, and she could have been more. And I think she wanted that. So she sees me doing this. And so rather than being jealous of it, she adds to helping me find this success. So she's constantly here at the house, helping me with these kids. She knows nothing about football, but she knows and understands the concept of breaking news. So we pretty much have code with each other. If a GM calls me, an owner calls me, a player calls me, you know, I have to take this. She gets it. And she's funny. Once in a while, she'll go, "Did you break it? Did you get beat?" You know, like she just likes to throw the day. And if I get beat, she's like, "Gotta work harder." You know, like she's really funny about it. But look, just like anything else, and it sounds like you probably have a similar setup. You can't have success without a partner in this. I know I can't. I'll speak for my household.
100%.
100%. And I have a husband who not only loves the NFL, but he understands it and he understands media. And if I, trust me, this is probably why I got married at 38, not at 24, to find someone to understand that was actually the secret sauce for me in finding the right partner, because this job takes so much out of you and time and stress and pressure, to have a partner that gets it, adds to it, helps with it. Kevin constantly is like, "Hey, you know what I was thinking about? You should give this person a call. I bet you, let's just say, you know, I bet you the Rams are going to make a move soon." Like, he'll just think of things. And I'm like, that's a great call. You know, and then of course, the parenting part of this, I try my best to show the boys when I'm around them. Like, I try to hide the phone under my thigh or like in my pocket, because I think that habit of them seeing you on your phone is so gross and dangerous. So look, for me, I wish I could say I have the balance, Jim. I don't. I just have a lot of help from my family and from the person I married. So there are days I'm a really good reporter. There are days I get beat because I'm doing tubs with the boys. Like, it's happened a million times. Or I'm at daycare pickup and I'm getting them in their car seats. It happened with Saquon Barkley this year. I think it was when they decided not to tag him. When they tagged him. And I got the scoop, by the way. I remember looking at the timestamp. I'm like, dude, I had a poor Schefter, but I was buckling the boys in. And I've talked to Schefter about this too. He's like, I couldn't do this with kids. This is insane. I'm like, it is insane, but I'm doing it and I'm figuring it out.
You know, it's really interesting because I'm far enough ahead of you, Diana, that I don't want to say that I know what's going to happen, but I can speak from experience, because now my wife and I are empty nesting. We have two boys, one just graduated from the University of Wisconsin, and one just started at the University of Boulder, or Colorado in Boulder. And I had that same sort of life. Like, it's just kind of understood that every single night dad came home and dad went to the home office. Dad did his work. Dad had stuff he had to do at night. Like, when my show came off the air and we went into post-production and did whatever we did, that didn't mean the day was over. And I've since talked about it with my kids. Like, we didn't have a normal life. I didn't go out during the week. We didn't go to movies. We didn't go to dinner, that because I was just kind of wired differently and built differently, and the demands of the job were different. And they didn't resent it, but they knew that it wasn't like their friends. And we've talked about it since. And it's interesting, like, my older son, who's in the business right now, he appreciates it. He now understands it. And I set that example. And I remember I used to bad cop the kids, and my wife Janet would be like, they're going to resent you. They're going to resent you. I'm like, listen, you think I want to do this? This is not easy. The easy thing would be is if I didn't care and just said I was too busy. It's not easy disciplining the kids, and I don't want to do it. But it's what I signed up for. It's the job, and they don't resent it. They respect it, and you'll see. Like, I think...
Well, you're instilling something,
right,
too, right?
Exactly.
We live in a time right now where it just feels like so many people are just handed things and given things. And, you know, my father was a plumber, and I watched him work every day. I watched him work on the weekends, and I just come from a very blue-collar culture. And to me, this is all I know. And my husband is the son of a plumber as well. So we always joke that, like, what are the chances, right? And by the way, our toilets are broke. Like, makes no sense. But we got two plumbers in the family. And so we have the same sort of tenacity towards achieving, but also this is what you do. And yes, it's a little different now in our time where it's what mommy and daddy do, not just daddy. But I think it's so important for my boys to see that I'm doing something in such a male-dominated world. And I really don't want to, like, dive into the gender thing, but I am the only woman doing this in football right now. And I take
but,
that.
But by the way, what does that feel like? What is that like?
I want more women to do it. I think it's not a lack of ability. I think it's fear. And I've been trying to spend more time with beat reporters, females that are doing this, that are way more talented than me in terms of understanding the game and being able to dig on information. But it takes a certain type of, it takes guts, actually, to put yourself out there and ask questions and poke around and be curious and be uncomfortable sometimes in relationships and piss people off. But in terms of around the league, being a woman doing it, you definitely deal with challenges, whether it's just the simplicity of being a female. Oh, she must be doing inappropriate stuff with men to get information. That's always the easy way people can try to think they can get ahead or try to put you down. Fortunately, I've been doing this long enough. I've moved past that. But it still floats around. Like, it shocks me. I had somebody recently at the league meeting tell me, he's like, do you remember when we grabbed lunch that time during the week of the Super Bowl? He said, do you know that I had someone ask me if we were in a relationship? I'm like, what? Like, like, you think we'd be past that at this point? But that's the challenging part as a woman. And meanwhile, most of my relationships in the league now are with the wives, right? Because I have so much in common with them as a mom. They're some of my favorite people to talk to. So I think that's been really difficult to navigate, especially when I was younger. Now I have such a support system and a reputation that it's helped. But I think the way the owners and GMs and head coaches and players deal with me is magnificent. Like, I don't deal with any sexism or oddness or in fact, sometimes my husband hears the guys on the phone with me all the time. He's like, they talk to you like a dude. I'm like, I know. I'm like, but I like it. Like, I think that's a compliment because they forget I'm a woman. And I think that's a good thing sometimes. But I think it's going to change. I think once women start seeing more females doing it and having success do it, I think they're going to hopefully be more encouraged because there's a space there. There's not a lot of people breaking news in general. There's really, what, 6-7 people in the NFL that do it consistently, that there's so much room for more. I mean, I don't want you because I don't want the competition, but at the same time, why not?
Why not? Why not? So leave me with this thought. This is so fun. What a great conversation. So I ended up in sports, but I actually got off the path for a minute or two. And strangely enough, I wanted to end up in network news. And my dude back in the day was Tom Brokaw, man. I loved him. I loved him so much. And because this was so long ago, I used to write letters, you know, snail mail. I would write letters and I would send them to all sorts of national figures like Brokaw, like Dan Rather, like Peter Jennings, Deborah Norville even. And I would ask for advice and I would do like just crazy things like, hey, I really want to observe your operation. I want to see how it works. And if I'm ever in town, can I do this? Can I buy you lunch? Like, I was a total kook. A total kook about it. You were fortunate enough, I know, to have an internship with ABC News. How did you end up working for Diane Sawyer, and what was that like? So I've got a quick question for you. Are you looking for ultimate comfort and pain relief? Let's compare G-Defy shoes to other shoe brands that promise comfort and support and pain relief. Typical shoe brands rely on EVA soles for cushioning. But G-Defy offers so much more. G-Defy goes above and beyond with VersoShock technology, providing superior shock absorption and energy return if you suffer from foot, knee, or back pain. G-Defy's advanced technology may help provide you with the relief you deserve. I can't even believe these shoes and the difference they make for me. G-Defy shoes also offer two free supportive orthotics to help improve your body's biomechanics, resulting in proper body alignment and ultimate comfort. Yes, they do all that. So whether you're an athlete, a busy parent, or just somebody who's always on the go, G-Defy shoes offers the versatility and the comfort that your feet crave and need. Say goodbye to discomfort. G-Defy is more than EVA soles. It could be your path to unparalleled comfort and pain relief. Visit G-Defy.com today. Experience ultimate comfort and pain relief at G-Defy.com. G-D-E-F-Y.com. Use the code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. That's code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. G-Defy shoes. They are incredible.
I love that you are such a dork like me because I did the same thing. I wrote to all of them, every one of them. And by the way, I got so many responses, which just blows my mind as somebody who's busy now and doing things. It's so difficult to get back to people that reach out, journalism students that want opportunity. And just looking back now, I'm like, I can't believe they wrote me. From Robin Mead to, obviously Diane Sawyer, these people wrote me. I'm like, thank you. Like I actually saw Robin Mead a few years ago and I went up to her and I told her, I'm like, you wrote to me. And it made me believe that I got in the industry because she wrote me a letter, you know? And she laughed. She's like, well, it did something. She's wonderful. I wish I had her talent, by the way. But going back to Diane, so I had gotten this internship originally with WABC. And that's all I wanted, Jim. All I wanted to do was work for Channel 7 Eyewitness News in New York City because my parents watched it and my grandparents watched it. And that's just what we did. We grew up watching Channel 7. So I wanted to be on it. And 250 people showed up for the internship interview. And they had all these tables set up. And everyone next to me went to either Columbia or had a dad that was an executive at NBC or whatever it was. I was like, there is no way Ricky Rossini has any juice in this building. You know, like the plumber and the nurse are not helping right now. But I went up there and I still stay in touch with the people there. And I'll never forget, they asked us a puzzle, like a riddle, and you had to solve it through questions. And the riddle was, there are 50 people in a cabin on the side of a mountain and they're all dead. What happened? And you could only ask yes or no questions. So I was at a table with six people and I was the last one in the row. So I was taking full advantage, listening to their questions, trying to see if I could kind of pivot off what they were getting. And they were asking every question that I'm sure you're thinking. And it got to me and I went, someone said, Was it smoke? Was it that, you know, was it, did they get caught in an avalanche? You know? And then I said, oh, the cabin of a plane. It was a plane crash.
Wow.
And I got the job. And so they send me the note. I get the internship. I'll never forget where I was when I got it. I went crazy. I called my parents. get this internship. And when I wound up seeing the guy that hired me, I asked him, I said, did I get the job? He said, you are the first person to ever solve that in the 20 years I've been here. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like so excited. And then I just realized I had an opportunity of a lifetime. So I worked, I did everything, just as I'm sure you did when you were an intern. I just was there all the time. Long story short, Diane Sawyer worked in the building next door. So I would go over there and I just kept bothering her assistant and be like, I just want to meet her. Can I just say hi? Can I just meet her? Finally, they let me meet her. And she was beyond what I could have imagined. They say, don't meet your heroes. Meet your heroes like Diane Sawyer. And I met her and she blew me away. And she was the classiest thing I've ever met. And I wound up keeping in touch and I wound up getting the internship. And it worked out and I learned so much from just observing.
That is such a wild story. That is amazing. And it just goes to show, like, when we talk to young people, it's just, it's so different right now. Don't get me started. But this is what it takes. You know, we are the old school and you're younger than I am, but this is exactly what it takes. You know, you might get really lucky. It might be extremely talented. It might get some breaks. But more often than not, if you want to make it in this business, this is the commitment that it takes and the grind and the tenacity and everything else. Diana, I'm not sure how you and I never ever had a conversation before this, but I'm so glad that we finally did. And I mean this, I said at the very top, I have great respect for you and your time. So thank you so much for stretching out for this pod and taking as much time and being as thoughtful and as intentional as you were. That was absolutely awesome. And I appreciate you very much.
My goodness. Thank you so much for all the kind words. Thank you for having me. I have been a fan of yours for a really, really long time. And thinking back to that conversation you had with your wife about your children understanding the work you put into it, I don't ever really truly believe sports fans get what it takes to do what you do, to have that knowledge and the depth and the ability to have that creative mind to not only discuss this league, but apply it to fans and listeners to their everyday life to make it relatable. It is a skill that only a few have, and you are one of them. So thank you for just being so incredible over the years and paving the way for so many people.
That is so nice, Diana. I appreciate that so much. That is such a nice thing to say. So thank you for that. Thank you for everything. And it is so good to meet you and talk to you. Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or somebody you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
Thanks, Jim.
If you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, well, that would not surprise me because that was a really enjoyable conversation. But if you did, the good news is there are many others just like it. In fact, over 300 of them, and they all hold up. So go back and check any or all of them out. And in the meantime, take a second and hit subscribe. That way you will be notified every single time we pump out a new episode. You don't need to go looking for it. It will find you instead. Take a second and consider subscribing. And I will catch you all next week for episode 309 of the Jim Rome Podcast. See you then. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, OReillyAuto.com/Rome.